This is the Home Health Revealed podcast. Hear stories from real industry leaders discussing topics affecting the ever-changing industries of home health, hospice, and palliative care. Welcome to Home Health Revealed. I am hosting today Hannah Vale. Michael Greenlee is not actually here with me today because I am on site at the Missouri Annual Conference. So we are here in Margaritaville, and ironically enough, it is 5 o'clock. It's always 5 o'clock here, but it's actually 5 on the clock. I have with me a very special guest today who is the Area Director for Biata Home Healthcare. Kelsey Stafford and I are going to talk today about different relationship pieces. So really bringing in defining trust in relationships when it comes to patients and family care in home health and hospice. So I'm looking forward to diving in. Before I get there though, let me just give you some background on Kelsey. She leads a multi-site operation specializing in pediatric and adult skilled nursing. She joined Biata as an associate director in 2018 through an acquisition and led the Springfield office, that's in Springfield, Missouri. She was promoted to director in 2020 and area director in 2023. Prior to Biata, Kelsey was the Community Relations Manager for Integrity Home Care and Hospice. Kelsey serves as a Senior Ambassador for Biata's Hearts and Home Care and was chosen as Rookie Ambassador of the Year in 2021. She's a member of the Missouri Alliance for Home Care and has served on the Pediatric Task Force since 2019. Kelsey earned her MBA from Missouri State in 2020 and her Bachelor's of Science in Speech Communication from Southern Illinois University in 2013. When she's not working, she's spending her time with her sons, Carter and Cannon, who are 5 and 2. That sounds like so much fun. Welcome, Kelsey.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So we realized that we actually met last year at this event. We were at booths across from each other and then didn't realize until we got here today, like, oh, it's you.
A surprise.
Yeah. So much fun. Well, I'm really excited to dive into this topic and just excited to hear the experience that you bring when it comes to all of these relationship pieces that are really so important for home health and hospice. How do you define trust in a relationship?
I would define trust as having confidence in another person, feeling safe with them, feeling that you know that they have your best interest in mind and you can trust their word. You know they're going to do what they say they're going to do.
Yeah. And why is that so important? Why do you feel like that is so important in the space that we're in?
It's so important for our clients because we're working in their homes and that's their vulnerable, safe space. So they're placing their trust in us that we are going to send them a nurse who is competent and confident and genuine, compassionate, and going to care for their child.
Yeah. And that's, I think it's different too. Pediatrics, like they're caring for a child. And when you're, I just know from being a mom and I'm sure with Carter and Cannon, you're the same way. Like, if somebody's caring for your child, you have to have that level of trust.
Absolutely. And even when there's medical needs, it's enhanced. You know, so the nurses are there to make sure they get their meds on time, make sure to get they're fed on time. These are really important things that are integral to their health and their lives long term. Our clients are not just pediatric, they're adult, but they're still someone's child.
Yeah. No, that's such a good point. What do you feel like are some of the common barriers to building trust there?
I would say the common barriers are miscommunications, lack of transparency, even mistrust from the past. If there's been a situation where they've had a provider or they've had an experience that's led them to have issues with trust in general, that's the biggest barrier for us to break down and to overcome.
And how do you feel like as nurses, as caretakers in the home, how can we overcome those barriers?
I think first you have to start with patience and understanding, coming to the table with empathy to try to understand what they went through and what their experience was and why it was that way. And then you have to invest in the relationship with communication, with follow through, with consistency, and just understand that it may not come at a time when you expect it to come, but you have to stay in the game. You have to be patient with them and it'll come eventually, maybe on their timeline and not yours.
How does that look like on first visit, right? You're like, you're having that moment before your knuckle knocks on that door.
Yeah, I think that's the most important part of building trust is that initial visit. When you come in and you meet them and you say, you know, I say, hi, I'm Kelsey from Biata. They don't know me from anyone else, from any other stranger. And so that's such an important part piece of the relationship to get that couch time and have the opportunity to just listen to them. And that's where you start. That's where the relationship starts, with that communication. And then from there, it has to be consistent and it has to be ongoing. So you have to continue to invest in that relationship and really listen and seek to understand where they're coming from. And then you follow through and follow up.
So you said couch time. So I'm just picturing, like, if I'm a caretaker, I'm walking in the house. I personally have, I'm not a nurse, but I mean, just as a personality, I have a tendency to want to, like, this is my list. This is my documentation. I need to check mark the boxes. I feel like what you're saying is that's not the mindset you go in. You're going in to, like, sit on the couch, make eye contact, listen to the patient, listen to the parents, right? Is that initial visit with the patient as well? Right?
Yes.
It is.
Yes. Okay. So we use the term couch time a lot at Beata because okay. the relationships that we have, you know, I'm typically in an office and the care is being done in a client's home. So I'm not able to be in 100 clients' homes across the state. So couch time is important to us because that's our opportunity to get in front of them and face to face and say, hey, you're important to me and I want to listen to you and I want to hear what's going on. And, you know, I want to be here for you to be able to provide a nurse for your child and give you consistent, reliable care. And that's where the trust really starts. So that couch time is something that's really important to us at Beata, that we get there and show them that they are a priority.
Yes. Yeah. So good. Okay. How do you rebuild trust after it's been broken?
That is really challenging. And it's one of the hardest things to do because both parties really have to be willing to do that. And the other party may not be willing to at first. So again, it goes back to having that patience and that consistency. So you have to first understand what went wrong. It may not have been your intention to break that trust. It may not even been you that broke that trust. It could have been a prior situation, okay. or it could have been something that happened on your watch and it was just a failed communication. So coming to the table and having that conversation to say, like, tell me what's going on. You know, where do we go into left field? How can we turn this around? And then having the patience to set the expectation, know what their expectations are, and then follow through and be consistent with that. Communicate with them where you're at, what you've done, what you're going to continue to do, and just understand that it's not going to come quickly. You have to consistently show that. And I've had experiences with clients who have had other experiences where it led them to mistrust. And when I came into the picture and got on the couch and had those conversations with them, it was not easy. And I could tell what I was saying was not being well received because they had those walls built up to say, I've heard this before, mm-hmm. and you're going to have to show me. And so I just bluntly said, like, I understand that this is not being well received. I'm going to have to show you, and that's okay. I understand that's where you're at. So just give me the time, and I will show you. And it does happen over time. It just, again, I have to understand it's not on my timeline. It's on theirs.
And I think even acknowledging that, like saying to somebody, I can tell by the way that I feel like you're interacting with me that you don't believe what I'm saying, so I'm going to have to prove it to you.
Yes.
Like, that's kind of a, okay, we're going to stop here and pause. And it's really, I feel like you probably have to be pretty in tune with their body language. Like, you're not just presenting, right? You're really having to kind of glean what they have going on, read their eyes.
Yes.
And kind of see, okay, where am I? And then what do I have to do? And then I'm sure follow through is, I mean, that's really just the way you're proving it. And we're in the show me state, right? I mean, you've said you're going to have to show me. And I do feel like that's kind of how it is when it's home health, and I'm sure even punctuated when it's pediatric.
Yes, absolutely. And just having those conversations over time and being in the field for a while, you kind of get a gauge for when somebody has those walls up, you know, and they're not vulnerable with the situation and they're a little guarded, and that's okay. But it's important to know that.
Do you feel like those are more with the patient or with the family?
I would say mostly with the family. Okay. A lot of our patients are nonverbal, so their families really are their advocate, and they're the ones who are there to say, you know, this is going well or this is not going well. So a lot of our interaction is with the family members or the guardians.
Can you share maybe a personal experience where trust played a crucial role in a relationship for you and what you learned from it?
Yeah, I think generally speaking with a lot of our clients, when I have the opportunity to be more involved with the initial care. So sometimes we have clients come to us and they've been told that they don't qualify for services, or they've been told that they aren't able to get private duty nursing. And so that whenever someone's like, I've been told no, it, my immediate reaction is like, let's get you a yes. So when I have that opportunity to work with them from the beginning and build that trust and help them establish services and help them get a nurse in their home, I build that credibility with them and we have a stronger relationship. So when something happens, say we've sent them a nurse and it's not a good fit or it doesn't work out or they lose nursing altogether, when I have to call and have that conversation with them or we end, you know, we end up speaking about it, they have that confidence in me and that trust when I say, like, this is what we're going to do and you are a priority, it's much easier to have that conversation because we have that relationship and that trust established. However, there are clients that I haven't had that level of interaction with. And so it's always harder when you have a situation that, you know, that blows up and the nurse leaves and then you have to call them and they don't have that relationship with you already built up. Mm-hmm. It makes it a lot more difficult. So what I've learned from that is just investing up front. You know, you've got to invest in the relationship before there's issues, before there's any concerns, and then you have that credibility established.
Okay. So is there a kid that like sticks out in your mind as this is a kid who had a really special place in my heart that I worked with?
Yes, there's several.
Are there? Can yes. you share?
Yes, I will share. So back several years ago, when I had just gotten started into home care, I met this family. I was at a speaking engagement. I used to do community relations. And I met this mom, and she had told me that her daughter did not qualify for services. And I was there with her and her daughter, and I was thinking, yes, she does. They lived in a very rural area of Missouri, so I could just imagine what they had gone through. And I know what families go through with insurance and, you know, when you have a disabled child, you're already dealing with, you know, medical appointments and insurance and all these things. And
transportation, financial, like, yes, absolutely.
So you get a couple no's and it's easy to get defeated and just kind of stop the process. Mm-hmm. So when I met them and realized that her daughter likely would qualify, we were able to get a services established not only at home, but at school as well. So she was able to have a nurse in her home. She was able to have a nurse at school. This was several years ago, and I just found out last week that her daughter graduated from services, which is really the goal for our clients, because that means they no longer need nursing. They're able to live more independently. So I think that was one of the stories that most recently touched my heart the most.
Yes, that has to feel so good for you.
Yes.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing. What roles do you feel like vulnerability play in establishing trust?
I would say vulnerability plays a huge role because you have to make that conscious decision to be vulnerable if you're going to trust. So it goes even further than the clients. I mean, my office team, you know, I manage right. four different locations. So I have to be able to trust the people that I've put in the positions to do what I need them to do. And to do that, I have to be vulnerable. So I can't say I trust you, but I'm going to look over your shoulder. I trust you, but I'm going to micromanage you. Like, if you trust, you have to be vulnerable enough to let your guard down and say, I trust you and this is what I need you to do. So I think if you're not vulnerable, are you really fully trusting someone?
Okay, not on the script, but I'm going to ask you, when you're hiring somebody or when you're looking at somebody for that position and you're making the decision as to whether or not you can be vulnerable, right? Whether you can trust that even if I'm not looking over their shoulder, or I'm not micromanaging them, which as a leader is exhausting to do. You just like that you cannot do that and know that a job's going to get done and sleep well at night. What do you look for in a person or when you're hiring, if that's something that you get to do, what are some key things that let you know, okay, I can trust this person?
So one of the things I always go back to is the Bayada way, because it's so prevalent in what we do and how we make our decisions as a company. So our core values are compassion, excellence, and reliability. So I'm looking for those things in a candidate first. And if I can tell that the compassion's there, I can tell that they strive for excellence, they want to do better, they want more for themselves, and that they have the reliability piece as well. Those are the first things I'm looking for. I'm also looking for people who are hungry for growth, who are, you know, more high energy, who are tenacious and are self-aware. I think self-awareness is huge because you can have gaps, but if you are not aware of what those are, it makes it challenging to point out to someone and get them to recognize something that they're blind to.
Sure. Oh, those are great things, three key things to look for. And I love that it's the Bayada way, as you said, so that everybody really says, okay, these are the qualities that are really important at any level. Is that, I mean, it yes. applies at any level, right? That's good. Okay. Can you share, and we'll let this be the last question, can you share some practical tips for maintaining trust over time?
Yes, I would say communication's key. So make sure that you're communicating. Make sure you're vulnerable with that communication as well. You have to set expectations. So a quote that I always share with my team is, unspoken expectations are premeditated resentments. And that just resonates with me really well, because a lot of times we have expectations that we haven't communicated, and then the things that people do start to irritate us a little bit, but they don't know. They may not know that that's your expectation. So I think setting expectations, effective communication, follow through, investing time in the relationship up front, those are all key to maintaining trust and building trust over time.
That's a really good quote. And so true. Not just in home health and hospice, not just in the workplace, but even personally. That's a great quote to deal with any relationship. So thank you. Well, I have so appreciated you being willing to come on and talk to me about this topic. I just think this is really important to talk about when you're in patients' homes. Are there any questions that I haven't asked you that you think I should ask you?
I don't think so. I think we've covered the topic. I've really enjoyed speaking with you about it today.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Thank you so much. Are you singing karaoke tonight?
I don't know. If I am, I'm not going to admit it.
Okay. Well, I will be there with the camera ready to go. Well, thank you again, Kelsey. Appreciate it so much. And to all of the listeners, thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you next time.